Are you looking for a book to boost your child's self-esteem and image? Listen to what six-time Emmy Award winner and Nobel Peace Prize nominee Shawn Duperin has to say about the Journey of Joy children's book series. She says, quote, "It's inspiring to find a children's book series that gets to the heart of why we're here and to enjoy life's journey. It is truly compelling. It reinforces your child's strong sense of self, the essence of what every parent wants for their precious child. I highly recommend," end quote. The four inspiring and beautifully illustrated books in the Journey of Joy children's book series, authored by Beth Donnelly and Dagny Grant, can be found on Amazon.com. Sharing the wisdom of positive I am statements, these books are titled I Am Enough, I Am Unique and Awesome, I Am Great, and I Am Brave. Pick up a set for the children in your life today. Just go to Amazon.com and enter Journey of Joy series. That's Journey of Joy series. Welcome to the Echoes of the Universe radio show, brought to you by Matrix Productions. Conscious conversations with Dagny Grant and Beth Donnelly, sharing thought-expanding moments to nourish your soul.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Echoes of the Soul Radio, brought to you by Matrix Productions. I'm Beth Donnelly, and I'm here with my co-host, Dagny Grant. Today, we are quite excited about our interview with Lisa Kay, Ph.D., because this topic is one that Dagny and I talk about a lot. And Lisa Kay is the author of the book Intuition on Demand. Sounds very intriguing, doesn't it? So if you've ever wanted to learn a step-by-step technique with tools to develop your own intuition from scratch, you may want to take a look at Lisa's book, where she describes how you can get instant intuitive guidance for all your important life decisions and have a better outcome. And you're probably going to learn a lot about the subject just listening to our show today, too. So we are glad that you're here with us. Lisa Kay, Ph.D., developed these methods and techniques to help her become a sold-out intuitive reader, and one day it actually saved her life. And we will have to hear more about that when she comes. She has taught this technique to hundreds of people around the world with immediate, stunning results. Developed from years of research, training, and experience, Intuition on Demand was created to help others, just like you, develop your own intuition from scratch. So before we bring Lisa on, I'd like to welcome my co-host, Dagny Grant, to the show. Hi, Dagny.
Hey, Beth, and we're really excited to speak with Lisa today about her work on intuition. As you mentioned, it is one of our favorite topics, the fact that everyone can listen to their intuition and it can really serve their decision-making, their directions they take with their own free will. The decisions they make in the work that they do, the relationships that they have, our willingness and ability, our skills to listen to our intuition and to understand what that means is can be life transforming for folks. And so we're really excited to have Lisa and her expertise on this topic on the show and bring that to our audience today. So yeah, this is going to be great.
It definitely is. Now, just a little bit more about Lisa before she comes on. She is a teacher, author, and speaker specializing in intuition, of course. Lisa is highly inquisitive and infinitely curious. So she is constantly learning and discovering new concepts, and as a result, acquired many certifications and degrees. She holds degrees in electrical engineering from Columbia University, psychobiology from the State of University of New York, and a PhD from the University of Metaphysical Sciences. Lisa is also certified in many healing energy modalities and intuitive arts. As an author, Lisa's work is frequently published in a variety of online magazines, including The Huffington Post, Inspire Me Today, Care2.com, and is a featured columnist for Om Times. Maggie to the show. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, thanks for having me on your show.
Of course, of course. I'm so excited to get right into what intuition actually is and where does the intuitive information come from. Could you give us a little start on just what intuition is?
Okay, well, intuition, the definition of intuition is knowing without knowing how you know it. And so what that means is that you're getting information. We're not really quite sure where it's not thought out. It's not deduced. It's not logic. It's coming from, you know, part our into the intuitive side of our brain, which is collecting information that can be that is coming through to us. And, you know, it may be coming from outside sources. It might be coming from you know, a process that's going on that we're not quite aware of inside of our brain, and or it could also be coming from, you know, what some people like to consider might be, you know, higher sources of, say, for example, all that is in consciousness.
All that is
so
in
that,
consciousness.
That is, yes. Some people might want to say, you know, your angels or your guides, too, and, I, you know, that I certainly believe is possible and is true.
So it kind of depends on a person's feeling about, like, source energy, maybe the Akashic field. Do you think that they could be getting information from the Akashic field?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that explains why people know things that is unexplainable, that you can't say, oh, well, they learned that or that they knew that from some other source that they had experienced. You know, that the source of information can be from the Akashic records or, you know, wherever else. We don't know where it comes from.
Oh, okay. Well, I was wanting to ask that question, and I'm glad that you're saying we don't always know where it comes from. So it's more of an individual kind of determination. Where the individual feels that they're the information.
Well, you know, I think it's individual in what the individual wants to believe, and but you know, yeah. Again, everybody has their own views, and perhaps the views are based on what they're comfortable with. I like to be very
right.
open-minded, because I think when you're open-minded, you know, then you're able to be. Get in, you know, you're able to learn and also get information and put pieces together that are have all kinds of possibilities. And so, you know, I'm open. So, and I think that would help most people.
That's a good way to be open. You know, this kind of flows into another question for me, so I'm going to ask it now. I assume that everyone can be intuitive, but I'm going to put that out to you, but. Please tell us why people should consider developing their intuition if they have it or if they want to get it. Could you go down that road a little bit?
Oh, sure. Well, I definitely believe that everybody is intuitive and through and that everybody can and should develop it, because it's a part of your abilities as a human being that, you know, we can definitely say that there is a part of our brain psychobiologically that is what I call the intuitive part of our brain. And, you know, how that's defined and determined is that a lot of what we consider to be intuition seems to parallel the functioning in the right side of our brain. And the right side of our brain is where I believe is where our intuition, or at least part of where it's coming from, because your intuition often speaks to you in pieces and symbols. It understands often the abstract understanding of the big picture, and that's how the right side of your brain works. Psychobiologically, they've scientifically shown that that is what happens in that part of your brain. And people who they've done studies and experiments with people who actually have both sides of their brains are actually split, and that means there's no communication between the two, and these are people who have had a special surgery, because it was this was done quite a few decades ago, but they did that because they felt that it would help people with epilepsy who had severe epilepsy where they couldn't function. So if they separated the two parts of the brain, basically cutting the connection, that would help reduce the seizures, which it did. But at the same time, what they discovered is that these people were sometimes their thinking mind, which is the left side, was unaware of what was happening on the right side of their brain. So they were able to therefore do experiments to communicate with that right side of the brain and then therefore determine how that right side works. And it's fascinating on how it works in the same ways that we receive intuitive messages. And so that shows us that that is where we're getting information from, or where we're processing it. And everybody has it. It's part of our biology. It's part of who we are.
Oh, that's a nice definition. I was not aware of that research. So it is fascinating. I would love to hear about how it saved your life. I mentioned that in the intro. I picked that up from your writings. Can you talk about that story?
Sure, absolutely. So basically, just to run it quickly, and I think you did mention a little bit in the intro, is that I started out not being intuitive at all. You know, some people say, oh, well, you know, I'm very intuitive. I've always been since I was a child. You know, I know things before they happen. Well, I didn't get any of that. I was what I considered not intuitive, though I always wanted to be able to develop it. And when I had a chance to, and time to do it, I did it because, as you said, I'm infinitely curious. And everybody has this ability. I've proven it for myself, so I know that other people can do it as well. And so I went and I studied. I studied with teachers, did a lot of research. I even studied, as you could well see, the psychobiological side, the biology side. And I started to put all the pieces together, and I was able to figure out how to make it happen for me. So I through a lot of practice and doing intuitive readings for other people and being I became very, very intuitive. And so one day, after I developed all this, it was in the summer of 2008, and I had gotten what I thought was the flu, and I was feeling malaise. I had a little low grade fever. And I, all right, just wait a while, it'll go away. But along with this, I was getting, my heart would race, it would pound while I was lying down, I might be resting, and I had difficulty breathing. And I thought, okay, well, that's a little odd, but maybe it's just part of this weird flu thing. So then one night, I woke up in the middle of the night, and it happened again. I get this heart racing, but this time I was shaking from head to toe. And I couldn't even hold a glass of water. I was shaking so hard. And so I woke up my husband, and I struggled to tell him, call 911. So he did, and they took me to the hospital. And by that time, I had stopped shaking, and they did some tests, and they found out I had bacteria in my blood. So they said, but you're not shaking anymore, so go home. Go see your doctor in the morning. You're not in danger anymore. And he'll, and he'll take care of you. So I went to the doctor, and he did what most doctors do. He prescribed antibiotics, antibiotic pills.
I was going to say that. He prescribed antibiotics.
Guess what, right? No surprise.
My ex-husband is having a heart attack, and the doctor prescribed antibiotics.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, you're right. So I took the pills, and guess what happened? Nothing. I kept getting these bouts, and my heart would race. I'd be lying down watching TV, and my heart would start to race, and I couldn't breathe, and then it would go away. So it happened again, but this time it was so bad that my hands turned white, and I felt I was going to pass out. And so I called 911. I went back to the hospital. And same thing, wasn't shaking anymore. I took blood. Still have bacteria in your blood, but you're not shaking anymore. Go home. And I said, well, wait a minute. What is this heart racing thing? And I can't breathe. I'm short of breath. And what is that? And the doctor said, oh, that was fear. You're hyperventilating. And I looked at him. I said, I'm a woman. He's a guy. I'm looking at him, and I'm like, no, that was not fear. And he's like, no, yes, it was. It was fear. Just go home, take your medicine. You'll be okay. So he sent me home. And at this point, I realized, okay, there's something really wrong. So I turned to my intuition, and I got, yes, it's serious, but if you see a different doctor, a specialist, you'll be okay. So now it's Friday afternoon, 4:30, and I got to find a new doctor. And what do you think happened? Anybody try to get a doctor at 4:30 or Friday afternoon? It's like impossible. So I'm leaving messages. Nobody's calling me back. And I'm like, okay. I tried Saturday morning because sometimes I have Saturday hours. Nobody's calling me back. And now I'm really concerned. So I turned to my intuition again and like, what do I do? And I was guided to take a book that had been sitting on my shelf for a bunch of years off the shelf and read it. It was How to Find the Best Pediatrician. I thought that was odd, but I was like, okay, my intuition is telling me to read this book. So I'm reading the book, and the word pediatrician comes up over and over again, of course. And then I realized, wait a minute, my pediatrician's a friend of mine. He lives down the street. Maybe he knows somebody who can help me. So I called him up. And and he said,
I
know what you need to do. You need to see a specialist. You need to see an infectious disease specialist. I know when he will see you tomorrow. I'll email him now. I highly suggest you go. So I went, and he did more blood tests, and he said, yes, you still have bacteria in your blood. But we found out more information. You have a heart infection. Yeah. And he put me in the hospital.
Whoa.
And so, and then he gave me intravenous antibiotics, which saved my life. And at that point, it was so bad that I couldn't stand up for longer than a minute or two. My heart would go crazy, and I felt like I was going to die and pass out, which I probably was dying. And, had I not gotten treatment right away, I don't know that I'd be here because I was going into sepsis, and they go into the hospital and everybody's, oh my God, she has endocarditis, you know, it's a bad thing. But they gave me medicine and I'm okay. So
wow,
that's the
story.
That's what happened. Yeah.
That's incredible.
So,
That's amazing. And I love that. And I think that probably a lot of people in our audience have experienced something similar in that they knew intuitively something was wrong, no matter what the doctors were telling them, or whatever, you know, just on doctors, but whatever experts might be telling them, that they knew intuitively differently than what they were being told by the experts, and that they either chose to follow that intuition, which served them, or they didn't, which ended up being a lesson that they learned. I think that our audience can really relate to that kind of story where you listen to that little voice in your head, right? You pay attention. You don't push it down, and that's one of the things that. That we're going to talk about a little bit more later in the show, but I, you were talking about something earlier about the biology of intuition, and that's one of the things that Beth and I have talked about a lot too, is that our belief that intuition is literally part of our biology, and not only as humans, but just as all life forms, right? All life forms have an intuitive part of their biology. When you consider the fact that herds of animals will run away from an area that's about to have an earthquake, things like that, right? There is an intuitive sense in us that awakens when things are happening. That go beyond the amygdala, you know, having us run from the tiger that we see chasing us. It goes beyond that into almost like a force field of energy that we're connected with, and our cells literally speak to us. You know, when we start feeling, it seems to me, and I would love to hear your take on this idea, but Beth and I study this as well, when we begin to feel an illness, we begin to feel symptoms in our body. That is we can take that intuitively and look further into that may be more than meets the eye. You and Beth were talking about the brain science behind intuition a little bit ago, and I would just love to have you speak a little bit more about the biology of intuition and how that connects with brain science and how it actually doesn't, how it can happen outside the actual organ of the brain as well.
Oh, sure. Well, you think about the saying that people say, well, you're only using 10% of your brain. I would say that you're only paying attention to 10% of your brain because your whole brain is working all the time. So what's going on in the other 90%, right? There's a lot that's going on there. And we're getting information all the time. And when you hear phenomenon happening to people with these intuitive messages that seem to get information that is beyond them, that, how did they know that? How could they ever know that? How do they know that something is happening, or just like the animals, as you said, how do they know the earthquake is coming? What senses do they have? How their instinct is working and knowing things without explanation of how they know it. And so, there's a lot there that we don't know, that science hasn't discovered yet. And actually there is a lot of science out there that certainly has been done on intuition and psychic phenomenon that shows that it does exist. It's just a matter of whether groups of scientists want to accept the results. There's been tremendous number of studies over the last century that prove that this phenomenon of being able to predict what's going to happen or be able to do what they call remote viewing, see things where you've never been, and being able to know what's in someone else's mind, telepathy actually does work. And it actually exists and it's been scientifically proven many, many times. So that gives you pause for thought. Okay. And looking at it from, say, an everyday standpoint, from you, me, and everyone else and those people listening, all right, if this is part of me, how do I access that? How do I turn it on, so to speak? How do I use it on demand? And that's kind of what was the inspiration for me to write the book, was to help other people figure out how to do that. And when you again, look at the science. So let's get back to the science, as you were asking, I explain to people, when you understand how the intuitive side of your mind works, the intuitive mind works, it's going to help you know how to access your intuition, if you will, because you're going to know more about how it speaks, how it works, and what it sounds and feels like, right? So you understand that, and then when it happens inside of you, you go, oh, I think that was my intuition talking. So here are some of the characteristics of intuition, which again parallels the right side of your brain. Intuition speaks in symbols. It speaks in images. It processes information in a very holistic way. There's a knowing, right? So another thing it does is it's very gestalt. So it's the part of your brain that tells you, when they have those two pictures that are the same, the kids game, and they say, okay, these two pictures are the same, but one is different. One has one thing that's slightly different in it. What is it? Then you have to figure out what it is in the picture that's different. It's the right side of your brain that figures that out, and it figures it out almost instantly, or pretty quickly. The thinking part of your mind, the left side of your brain, would not be that quick. So let me explain to you the difference. So when you look at two pictures and they're exactly the same, one thing's different, something in your head goes, ooh, there it is, it's right there in that part of the picture, and then you can double check yourself and go, yeah, there was a fire hydrant there, and now it's not in this picture, right? You get it. The left side of your brain, the thinking part of your brain, would do this. It would look at every object in that picture. So in picture one, it would look at every object, go, this, it'll say tree, house, grass, mailbox, and it'll go through every single object, right? List them all out. And then it would go list them all out in picture two, in the other picture, tree, grass, house, And then when it found out one was missing out of that list, That's the thing that's missing. That's how the left-sided brain works. That's how the thinking mind works. It's deduction, logic. So the right side of your brain, it sees things in a gestalt, big picture way, sees the difference. And that's why oftentimes when you walk into a room, you have a feeling, you might have a feeling that something is different. You might see something. There's not something not right in here. It may be something that's missing, or it just might be a, you know, there's something that was the same before and is different now. And that's your right brain talking to you, but it also could be picking up some intuitive information. So, you know, somebody's been in this room. It may not have changed, but it may be somebody was in here, and I can sense that. And that's what the right side of your brain does. So there are a lot of parallels between how the right side of the brain works and your intuition. And those are just a few of those characteristics.
I think one of the things that you're addressing there is some people's propensity to be clairsentient, clairaudient, all the clairs. I think that there are some misconceptions about intuition, where the topics of being clairsentient, for example, versus being intuitive, versus being an empath, versus being a psychic, those kinds of things, or being psychic, not a psychic, but being psychic, I think for a lot of people there are misconceptions about how those are all delineated. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Oh, sure, yeah. Oh, I would love to, yes. The myths of intuition.
I know.
Yeah, that's a good one. Let's take the psychic versus intuition, and you know these are all terms and how people like to use them in terms of definition. So my feeling and my definition is that intuition is something we all have. It's a skill. It's a thing that we have an ability for, and it's a spectrum, right? So when most people don't develop their intuition, or they're not sensitive to it, so then they may feel that they're not too intuitive or have a little intuition or not intuitive at all. And then when you develop it and you get better at using it like any other skill, you get better and better and better to the point where the things that you can do with your intuition seem like you're psychic. And to me, that's really what it is that a psychic is somebody who really has a very, very well-developed intuition. It's that spectrum. People like, sometimes they think, oh, well, psychic is super special and I could never do that. And, well, you know, there are people out there who have super skills that they've developed. It could be an Olympic swimmer, right? It could be someone who has one of those people who are like, a genius with their memory, but they train themselves so they can remember everybody's name, you know, in the audience. Well, and they train themselves how to do that. And it seems like magic, but it's they train themselves. Same thing with swimming. Now, some people have, you know, a propensity to be better at certain things than others. And that's probably why you see people who are just naturally intuitive or naturally psychic. So that's one area of definition. Then the other is the clairs. So the clairs often, for those people who are not too familiar, they often define, they're called the psychic senses, the clairs. So clairsentience is being, picking up your quote, psychic or your intuitive information through your sense of feeling. Clairaudience is hearing. Clairvoyance is literally clear seeing, and so on and so forth. And some people term themselves as, you know, I'm a clairvoyant or I'm a clairsentient and I'm a clairaudient. But I feel, you know, and I very strongly so, that we all have our regular physical senses, but we don't call ourselves a seeing person or just a hearing person. We have all our senses and we use them all. And I know that you can develop all your clairs, all your psychic senses, and be able to use them all equally well. And that happens when you develop them. Now, you know, I think some people feel that they're clairsentient only because they have been recognizing their intuitive and messages through their sense of feeling. And so, and they just, they're naturally good at that, and they pay attention to that, and they say, well, I'm clairsentient because that's what they're naturally good at doing, or maybe that's what they've only developed. But I have been able to develop all my clairs, and I used to think, you know, God, clairvoyance, what a cool thing. You can be able to see see places where you've never been, and see, you know, people that you know. I know what your boyfriend looks like, but I've never seen him. I thought that, you know, that's really, really cool. But I didn't see anything. In the beginning, I just saw black, and I was like, oh gosh, you know, I wonder if I could become clairvoyant. And you know what? Through my development, I became clairvoyant. It's the coolest thing. You can do it. Get on.
I think wow. It is allowing, don't you? What we allow is what we experience in just about every way. It's allowing ourselves to be quote unquote intuitive, or to experience our intuition. One of the things you talk about is practicing that, you know, that's part of an allowing, that the decision that you can experience your intuition, mm-hmm. and this is what these are the steps I'm going to take to do that, rather than just droning through, you know, Friday today, I'm going to actually pay attention to the fact that I'm intuitive, right?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, I talk about the 10 key secrets to intuition, and there are things that I discovered that were really mind-blowing, that's just like, wow, that's how intuition works. One of them is belief equals power. And what that means is that if you believe you can do it, then you're going to be able to do it. And that is be intuitive, get intuitive information, because doubt is the biggest intuition killer. And for a lot of reasons, part of it is because you end up dismissing things that are intuition. And, you know, you have to believe that if you don't believe you could swim ever, you're never going to get in the water and do it. And if you were in the water, you're constantly going to think, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. And so you have to believe, you have to be open, just as you said. It's really important. And then, like any skill, and you know, this is what we talk about in the book, is you have to find a way to develop that skill. You have a technique, you have a method, like anything else. You know, just like, you know, if you want to learn how to serve a ball, you got to hold in tennis, you got to hold a racket in a certain way and put your feet in a certain spot, and so on and so forth. And it's the same thing with intuition. You have to have a good technique that's tangible, that you know what the steps are. You know, it's got to be something that I can do, as opposed to, well, okay, I'm going to go. Okay, now step number three is you connect to spirit. I don't know what that means. That's not tangible to me. So that I didn't like. So I was able to develop a technique that had very clear, tangible steps that everybody can do. And then practice it. Because like any skill, if you want to get better, you have to do it over and over and over again. And as you're doing it, and you do it on small things, because big things are harder. You know, you're not going to learn how to serve a ball for the first time and then go try to play the U.S. Open. That's not going to work. So you do small things, you practice, and sometimes, you know, you're going to get it right, which is great, and sometimes you're going to have a miss, and that's okay too. And I've watched people within a weekend go from, I don't know what I'm doing, I can't do this, to become incredibly intuitive through, you know, learning the techniques and practicing, to the point where, you know, most people would think that they were psychic. It's possible to do, and that's why I'm very passionate about it, because then, you know, what a wonderful life you could have. You're always comforted and secured that something's got your back. Your intuition's going to tell you the right thing, the best thing for you. Let's get there.
Oh, that's incredible. Lisa, I have a question for you. Ever since Doggy and I knew that you were going to come on our show, we kind of had this question in the back of our mind, and we wanted to ask you, how can you tell if it's your intuition or if you're just making it up?
Ah, I love that question. That is probably the number one frequently asked question. How do I know I'm not making it up? Okay. So it has two parts to it. One is you have to understand how intuition comes to you. And that's what we talked about earlier, what it's like to experience it, the characteristics of intuition. you have to understand that intuition is not going to talk to you like I'm talking to you now. It's not going to give you a whole long litany of description. It might be a couple words here or there. It might be a pop-up in your mind of an image. And it is in your mind, by the way. People think, oh, I have to see things outside of me. That's not always the case. Most of the time it's in your mind. But then you get confused. Well, did I make that up or not? Okay, so that's the second part. And most people are probably not going to be too happy about this. But what you have to do is practice. And and that's how you're going to know. I mean, it's just like, you know, how do you know that you were holding the racket properly when you served? Well, when that ball goes into the service box, you know, it's like, oh, I did it. I know what it felt like. Right? So you're going to do it again, and it'll feel the same when it's right. Make sense?
Yes, it does. So you kind of test it.
You have to practice, but you know, because there are times when you're gonna practice and you're gonna get it wrong. And it's like, okay, so now I know that, you know, what came to me when I got it wrong was not how it feels. And then when you get it and it's right, and it's like, wow, I got that pop up of an image in my mind. I saw it was a flash. It was very quick, and you know, I know that's how it is. And I'll give you an example. And I, you know, obviously I try to practice myself, and this is part of how I discovered that I could be, and I am clairvoyant, is I was practicing and you can practice everywhere and anywhere, which is really great. And everybody should do that. I suggest that they do. And I was going to visit, I went to a doctor of mine who I had been seeing, you know, on a periodic basis. And I went in to see him, and I knew from the last time I had saw him a couple months ago that he was having a back issue. And so I was wondering, gee, I wonder how he is. And I thought, oh, I know, this will be a really good intuition test, an intuition exercise. So immediately I got an image in my head, which was popped up so fast that as I thought about, you know, I can see how he's doing. I saw him hunched over on crutches wearing a white and green striped shirt. And I thought, oh my gosh, don't think like that. That's terrible. That's my mother talking. Yeah. Don't think like that. Right? And I dismissed it. And then I said, all right, let me settle down. I've used my technique, you know, and get into this and see what I get. Right? And then did my technique, got some things, which turned out right later, which is great. But 10 minutes later, he walks in, and he's hunched over on crutches wearing a white and green striped shirt. And I was like,
oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God. And I thought, oh, my God, what happened to you? And then I realized, wait a minute. I saw that. I had that picture pop up in my head, and I dismissed it. And it came up so fast, and it was before I even had a chance to really settle into, you know, doing my technique. And then I realized, oh, that's how the pictures come. It's a flash, and it comes. It's a very subtle, and I experienced it and I felt it, and that's how you start to know. So now, what I do is I'm very aware and I pay attention to things that flash in my mind very very briefly and very quickly, and as you practice, you become more and more aware of those flashes, and you know and. And, you know, that's how you start to learn. I learned that's how the images, the clairvoyant images appear. And now you could do the same thing with feeling. I like to do energy hunting, right? So here's another example. I was in a space that I was looking at to do an event and just checking it out. It happened to be in a convent. And I was with my assistant, and we were walking around, and I like to walk around just to see how the place feels. And I found something that felt really, really good. It was like down this hallway. It felt like amazing. And I was like, what is that? What is down there? And I said to my assistant, come, let's go down, find out. So we walked down the hallway, and it gets stronger and stronger. And at the end of the hallway was a sanctuary. And I discovered, asking them, they said, oh, that's where the nuns pray every day, all day. So I learned, okay, so that's the feeling, right? That's the intuitive feeling, my sense, my intuitive sense. Pick that up.
Yeah.
That's all practice.
Yeah.
That's how you know. That's how you know.
Yeah.
Does that make
sense?
Well,
it is, you know, that when you say that the things come in images, you know, it's one of the things that I think we tend to do is we talk ourselves out of it. We go, well, that doesn't make any sense. Or we are the right brain, back to the right brain, left brain, our mind tries to talk ourselves out of what we're feeling with logic. And that's one of the things that,
yeah,
that I think we need to practice, just allowing the intuition to be without trying to outthink it.
Yes, and that is actually one of the key things that I tell people. That's actually another 10 key secret, is you get what you get and you don't get upset.
Right.
So,
right.
Because what happens, we get something and then we go, as you said, with logic, we doubt it. Oh, that can't be. Or we overthink it. Oh, that must mean this, and the other thing. And if you're thinking it, if you're trying to use your logic to deduce it, then you're probably going to end up with the wrong answer. Because, you know,
yeah,
it's like somebody
that's
coming to tell you a story, right? You know, you're not going to, you have to take what you get, because, you know, you don't know the story. You don't know the story.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I usually feel that, you know, my intuition is totally, you know, right brain for me. And if I ever start using my left brain and trying to dissect it or interpret it, it really doesn't come. Then I'm really getting nothing. But if I really let it go and recognize it and be relaxed.
And
you're right.
It's fun.
Yes, it is. And it is like an image that just kind of pops in. I find that those are the best ones, because they're just, I never thought of it like a flash, but that's kind of what they are.
It is a flash. It is a flash. And the words, you know, the way intuition talks to us is, it's short. It might be one word, it might be three words, but it's usually not a whole ramble. And that's what you have to pay attention to. Say again.
I when you said that, it's usually a word or three words. That's what usually happens to me when I get words. It's usually one word. And I was going to ask you, because first you said it was usually images, so I'm glad you covered that fact about words, but it's not like a conversation.
It's not a long, drawn out, yeah, conversation.
Right.
Or explanation. It's just it might be a one sentence, and that's it.
Yeah.
Or it might be just an understanding, but it's usually a flash, and it's quieter. So, you know, your thinking mind's very loud. So you have to practice, and that's
right.
Why they say meditation is good, because you learn what it's like to have a quieter mind. And when things pop up in your meditation, you notice them, you don't hang on to them. And then now you're practiced into noticing things that are coming along in your head. You know, it's kind of like this. It's, here's a good analogy. I had a client once who came to me, and she was telling me how, you know, her mind's always talking, and she gets so absorbed in her thoughts that when she gets in the car to drive somewhere, she often doesn't know how she got there. She's all of a sudden she's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's because her mind was thinking so much that she wasn't present.
Right.
That's not a good thing. So that's your mind talking so loud to you that, you know, it drowns out your intuition. Now, the opposite would be is if you get in your car and you're not too worried about what's on your to-do list today or what you have to do once you get where you're going, but you're just sitting there enjoying the drive. You're enjoying what you're passing. You're enjoying looking at your surroundings, or, you know, or just being in the zone of, you know, of driving. And, you know, that's what they say. What was it, Esther Hicks, who channels Abraham? She said one time that one of the reasons why she's good at channeling, which I believe is kind of an intuitive skill, is that when she's in the car, she's not thinking. She says that this is how life is for her. She sees cow, tree, rock. It just comes by and then it goes.
In the moment.
that's what you have to be able to do. Just turn your mind off into sit in the car and cow.
Well, it is one of the things that, you know, that can keep us from being intuitive. One of the blocks of being intuitive or allowing our intuition is how we how our mind can be constantly reprocessing what happened in the past or be constantly worrying about what may or may not happen in the future. And we literally don't allow any time in the current moment to even notice our intuition.
Yes. You know, and that's the problem. And you know, in a way, I kind of like what I love about all this work is it's really akin and very closely connected to living life. And, you know, we have to be, if you're living in the future, thinking about the future, what's going to happen next, or you're worried about what you did and you're thinking about the past, you're not in the present.
Right.
Right, and that's right. And you have to, if you want to live life, you have to live in the present, and remind yourself that it's okay to plan.
In the present.
It certainly does, and that's another thing. Another characteristic about your intuitive mind is it is in the here and now. There was a woman, Jill Bolte Taylor. Now she's a neuroscientist, which is really fascinating. And what happened to her was she had a stroke. And she had a hemorrhage in the left side of her brain. She was very conscious when it happened.
She did a TED talk, didn't she?
She did. It was wonderful. And what happened was that hemorrhage basically turned off the left side of her brain, the thinking part of her brain. And so, and what she experienced was what it was like to only be aware of what your right side of your brain was doing. And she experienced being not only in the now and present, but oneness with everything. It was almost an experience of God, which is fascinating.
Well, one of the things that was really fun about that, one of the things that was true about that story, if I recall, was that her area of study and work was so cerebral, it was so left-brained, that it was just this drastic departure from her norm.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And she actually was, after that, she started to do some artwork, and she does depictions of the brain, you know, in some artwork that she does, which is really fascinating. So, and what's fascinating about that whole experience, being a neuroscientist, was she was actually able to, after they, you know, healed her and fixed her hemorrhage, she was able to gain everything back. She got back her speaking, her speech, her cognitive process, her ability to do math, which is, you know, in that side of your brain too. But she also retained the experience, and she also had this enhanced ability to, you know, do this beautiful works of art. So, and then write a book about her experience, which I think is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember the book. That's a brilliant story about this.
Really, yes, really, and if anybody's interested in reading the book, it's called My Stroke of Insight. Yeah, by Jill Bolte Taylor.
Oh, right.
Right. So I wanted to ask you, getting back to the whole concept of your book, to get your intuition to focus on demand, what would be one of the key steps that you would to making your intuition happen when you want it to get in here?
Okay. Well, that's why, and you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's why the book is called Intuition on Demand, is because you want it to happen when you want it to happen. I found that, you know, any intuitive experiences I had were either when I was dreaming asleep, mostly I was asleep, or most of us experience it where it just, you know, randomly happens, and that's not too useful to you either, you know, random or being asleep. So the way you make it happen on demand is you ask it a question. And the reason why that works is it's what we call in science is a stimulus. It's a stimuli. And it triggers your intuition to respond. But the problem is it also triggers your thinking mind to respond. So you have to learn how to recognize your intuition speaking to you, number one, and also be able to kind of turn off your thinking mind. But that doesn't mean that you're going to sleep. It just means that And the technique does is it gets you the question, the kind of question you ask is important. So if you ask a question that gives your thinking mind a little time to think, your intuition will still respond instantly. And so it gives you an ability to pay attention and go, oh, okay, so now I've got what my intuition is telling me. While your thinking mind is trying to come up with an answer. That's how you make it happen on demand, is you ask it a question.
That's wonderful. So your both sides of your brain could be working, but that kind of flash technique that you were talking about, the intuition will happen first.
Yes,
while your,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
Your
yes,
left brain
and
is
being open. Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's also why, and that goes back to getting your thinking mind out of the way, because I know that's where people always get tripped up. And there are other techniques and other methods you can use to get your thinking mind out of the way. One of them is using intuition tools, which is, your intuition also will speak in terms of symbols. And another way it works is it will guide your attention to look at things or even hear things that are relevant to the answer it's trying to give you. I never realized that. I thought that was the coolest thing. How could your intuition, give you a message outside of you? Well, that's how it does it. It guides your attention to look at certain things. So, for example, I was... say again?
Oh, I was just going to say that's kind of what happened to you with the pediatrician book.
Yes, exactly. It guided me to look at that book. Well, that's exactly it. So that's a perfect example. And so, there are things outside of you that have that will have meaning, and you have to be open to that. And so that's part of how you pay attention to your intuition giving you information, is understanding it, how it does. So you trigger it, and then you're open, and then and I talk about how you should be open, and I'll give you a brief description, which is. Being open is kind of like what I tell people, this is, I'll give away the 10th secret, which is the best one. It's where you are when you ask the question, where is the bathroom? Okay. So when you ask the question of somebody, where is the bathroom, because you need to go and you don't know where it is, how are you? You're open. What does that mean? You're all ears. You're not second-guessing what they're saying or what they're going to say. And when they give you the answer, you don't judge it. You just go, right? You go where they tell you to go. And that's the way you have to be. You ask a question, and then you're open. You don't judge what you get, and you're just all ears, and you pause. That's what being open is. And so when they say, you got to open yourself up to spirit, that's sort of what they mean. That's what they say.
Yeah.
What a great analogy. I love that analogy. That's really,
isn't that awesome?
Just anybody can, right. It really is. That's
everybody
fantastic.
Everybody does that.
Yeah.
That was something that I realized. I was trying to teach people after I've developed all this and I was able to, get into the be open part and it worked. And then I was like, well, what is that? What is that state like? And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. It's like when you ask where you're going to where's the bathroom? And it's just like, you just pause and you're open.
Yeah, it's kind of like what I tend to do at the grocery store is use my intuition to kind of almost like a what's that thing called that you find water with on the ground or
a divining rod.
Yeah, divining rod.
Yeah.
Or the muscle testing almost, right? Is this food? I'll let my cells decide, right? I just let my body decide whether I'm leaning into something or leaning away from it.
Kinesiology,
and it's, it makes going to the grocery store kind of fun too, because it adds this. You're not kind of it takes away the oh my gosh, this is the I don't want to go to the grocery store. It's a task or whatever. It kind of makes it a game. It can make it kind of fun and more interesting. To practice.
I just talked about that intuitive eating. Basically, on my when people sign up for my list, for my newsletter list, they get, you know, every week they get a new intuition tip. And one of them that just went out was how you can use your body to tell you what's the right thing to eat. Now, most people don't pay attention to their bodies, right? But your body is another way that you can get intuitive information.
Can they find that at www.lmk88.com, or is there a better place for them to contact you?
That's the place. The best place to get me is at my website, lmk88.com. Those are my initials. lmk88. I like the number 88. 88.com. And, just sign up for my newsletter. And it is a good number. And you'll get actually, there's a free ebook there which teaches you how to use your intuition to make decisions. And then you get weekly tips on intuition and the best way to get me. And I've got a ton of stuff over there, blog posts and podcasts and videos. And so
that's fantastic. Well, just for everybody that's listening, that link will be on the radio site where you're listening right now. Just go click that link and it'll take you right over there to check out everything that Lisa's got going on right now and get on her list. And get those tips.
Thank you.
I was going to say, I'm going to go click on the link. It sounds like a really good link to have. Get a lot of further information. Mm-hmm. So for all of you guys out there today listening in, we've been talking today with Lisa Kay, PhD, author of the book Intuition on Demand. And Lisa, could you, if you could just say a final thought, one of your fascinating thoughts. You've been giving us a lot of those today. But one final thought that you can talk to our audience about intuition that you'd like to share right now, that would be super.
Well, I'd like everybody to know you really can do this. Everybody can develop their intuition. It doesn't matter if you don't feel like you've ever, you know, you're not intuitive at all. That's the way I felt. And you can become exceedingly intuitive. It's a gift. You know, that's what Einstein said. It's the gift that we've forgotten. And, you know, and once you have your intuition, you know, working for you, you know that you're always going to be going in the right direction. You'll make the right decisions. And how wonderful does it feel to feel comforted and safe and that somebody, something out there always has your back?
Oh, that's wonderful. The gift that we forgot. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for being on our show. We loved having you, and this has been so informative and exciting. So thanks again. And thanks to my co-host, Dodney Gray.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a fun conversation. I really enjoyed being on your show. Thank you.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did, Lisa. And thanks to our amazing audience out there. Have a wonderful week. And bye, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa. Peace out, everybody. See you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to Echoes of the Universe. Join us again for conversations that inspire you to realize your endless possibilities. Same time, same station, same universe.